From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. This month, we're doing something a little bit different with our program. For many of us, the long slog of winter is just now getting underway. Christmas is in the rearview mirror, and up ahead, the bleak stretches of January and February. So take your mind off all that with a great book about science. And I don't mean those dusty old textbooks from your school days. I mean books that tell fascinating stories that are about or influenced by science. Our first recommendation for The Method's winter reading list comes from Margaret Dean. She first appeared as a guest back in June. She says you need to read Carrying the Fire, an autobiography by astronaut Michael Collins.
There are a lot of great astronaut biographies. I mean, as you can imagine, there's so many great stories that come out of spaceflight, so many great personalities. Of all of the astronaut books that I've read, many of them are great, but one that has really just jumped out at me and announced itself as my favorite, not only is my favorite astronaut book, but one of the best memoirs I've ever read of any kind, is Michael Collins' Carrying the Fire.
When I was looking at book reviews for Carrying the Fire, almost universally, the reviewers say, you know, for an astronaut, no offense to astronauts, Michael Collins is a really good writer. It's a quality issue, so that even if you're not well-versed in aeronautics and astronautics, you could get a lot out of this book.
You know, he has some lofty ideas he's trying to get onto the page, like what it means to be a test pilot, what it means to go to space. But he has a very writerly instinct for seeing those experiences in concrete ways.
And astronauts, especially the nation's early astronauts, were mainly test pilots, engineers, people with mechanical backgrounds. They weren't used to talking about emotions or feelings. And to this day, many of the Apollo astronauts struggle with the question, well, how did it feel to go into space? How did it feel to walk on the moon? For Mike Collins, he does a really good job of communicating not just what happened, but he also talks about what it felt like to orbit the moon on Apollo 11, to go into space and to kind of deal with the aftermath of that.
He was the command module pilot, so he was left orbiting the moon by himself while Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin descended to the surface. And he worried the whole time they were gone, as you can imagine, that they might not make it back, they might make it back, and they might not be able to dock properly. So when they did, the lunar module lifted successfully off the surface of the moon. They matched orbits, which is no small thing.
Right.
They docked successfully. They opened the hatch. His friend Buzz Aldrin came through, and there's this great moment where he felt this instinct to grab Buzz by the ears and kiss him, and then he thought, "Man, that's not really a manly thing to do. I won't do that." But that he remembered that and shared it, that means so much to us who didn't get to experience those things. It's that kind of moment that, for me, really, really brings the journey to life.
Margaret Lazarus Dean is an associate professor of English here at the University of Tennessee. One of her specialties in research and writing is the space program, and her recommendation for your winter science reading list is Carrying the Fire, an autobiography by astronaut Michael Collins. And Dr. Dean, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
Lindsay Wainwright was a guest on The Method back in February. Her pick for your winter reading list is Bill Bryson's 2005 book, A Short History of Nearly Everything.
I enjoy Bill Bryson's writing overall. I find his writing style very approachable, and he introduces so many topics in science and kind of the history of the Earth in a very seamless way and in a very approachable way that I thought that this would be really good reading for kind of the cold wintry months.
With a title like A Short History of Nearly Everything, there's going to be a lot of ground to cover, but it's not an especially thick book. Tell us how Bryson condenses this information and makes it readable.
He makes the information seamless. He's really telling a story. He's telling us all about various people in the history of science and making them very interesting and personable. So treating them as actual people, really reminding the reader that all of these amazing developments in history happened within the context of real lives.
He covers chemistry, paleontology, astronomy, even particle physics in this as well. But you're saying that this is not so technical that the general reader wouldn't be able to get it. This is more of a narrative, more of a story like you might read in a novel or a book of a different genre.
Absolutely. It's not technical at all. Some of the other books that I was considering are quite technical and probably don't make for as seamless or as pleasant a read. And I think that his style is very pleasant. It's very focused on the people who are creating these or making these discoveries. And what's really fantastic about his writing is that he's introducing very complex concepts and a very complex history in an approachable way and in a way that we understand, that a general reader can understand.
Lindsay Wainwright works at the McClung Museum here in Knoxville, and her pick for the winter reading list on The Method, A Short History of Nearly Everything by American writer Bill Bryson. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Brandon.
Before we go, I'd like to make my own recommendation for your winter reading list, and it's about time. No, I mean, really, it's about time. Back before GPS, before there were accurate maps and atlases, even before the United States existed, sailors venturing far away from home had to feel their way around the globe using a process called dead reckoning. In other words, they guessed, because they had no way to tell how far east or west they had sailed from the port where the journey had started. As you can probably imagine, that's not such a great way to explore the seven seas, and a lot of people got lost or died in shipwrecks because they couldn't figure out a way to measure their east-to-west distance, their longitude. Enter British clockmaker John Harrison. In 1735, he figured out a way to measure longitude, giving sailors, explorers, mapmakers, and merchants the world's first accurate device to determine one's location on the high seas once and for all. The story of John Harrison's invention is told in Dava Sobel's wonderful book, Longitude. She really brings Harrison to life, as well as his supporters and more than a few detractors. If you're a fast reader, I should warn you, it's fairly short. But if you get to the end and find, as I did, that you really enjoyed Dava Sobel's writing style, you're in luck. She's written other books about how people work with science, including Galileo's Daughter, The Planets, and most recently, A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. No matter which one you pick, you've got a winner. Thanks for joining us on The Method. Download our podcast archive from iTunes or listen online at WUOT.org. Also at our website, you can find more about our winter book picks. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. We'll see you in 2016.